Hello, airport industry folks. Welcome to the AX Insider podcast, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Andy Telejohn, the senior writer at Airport Experience News. This podcast will be part of our 20 Years, 20 Voices series, celebrating the upcoming 20th Airport Experience Conference. During these calls, we're talking with industry veterans who've overseen the evolution of the concessions industry and the improvement of the customer experience over the last two decades and change. Today, we're talking with Pat Murray, Deputy Chief Executive Officer with SSP America. Pat, I guess you haven't been with SSP for quite 20 years at this point, but you've been in the industry for a while now. What's keeping you busy these days? Thanks for taking some time.
Well, Andy, thanks for having me. Thanks for doing this, and thanks to Evolve, the news in the industry that of course helps perpetuate our business. So much appreciated. And what I'm doing today is the day job every day. Around the country, different airport, different day. Both hoping to grow SSP and improve upon our business and our business channel.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for taking some time and fitting me in. I appreciate it. You had a successful career on the street in airports. You had a successful career on the street in restaurants, and I'm wondering what made you decide to get into the airport industry in the first place? This is a different business than it is on the street. What intrigued you about this?
You know, Andy, it's funny, you don't often think about these things, but I bet many of us, you know, if we didn't have a relative in the industry, it's likely we didn't even know the industry existed, right? So, in my restaurant life, I was busy flying every day, and we had restaurants scattered across the country, and I was in airports, but I never thought that that was a separate industry. I really ended up in aviation, I guess I'll say, for a couple of reasons. One, I then back in early 2005 had what was my third child, who is now off to college. And, I felt like I needed to go find another job that involved less travel. So, it led me to the aviation business, of course. But that's a truthful story. Probably the biggest difference in that business channel was, really 7 day a week type stuff, high volume restaurants, weekends, et cetera. And me being on the other side of the country, my wife also having her own executive career. And, when I went looking for what I thought would be my next course of action, a recruiter hooked me up with HMS Host. That's where I met my now lifetime friend, Pat Carroll. And I think we sort of just had the chemistry to hit it off in the interview. I still recall my wife, when I got home, asking me what the job was all about. Me blindly saying I actually have no idea what they do for a living. And just something to do with food. And I thought, I could figure it out. And my newfound Irish friend, I knew I'd be safe with. So, that's sort of how I ended up in aviation. And, I landed at HMS Host. It was a great experience. Many, many, many wonderful people. I thought I'd actually spend the next 20 years working there. But that wasn't really a part of the plan, nor was I like disgruntled or something looking for another job. It just so happened that Les Cabetta, who was the then EVP at Host and had been very kind to me, offered me a position with this sort of startup company. And I suppose it appealed to my, entrepreneurial spirit. And, that led me here to, where now I'm hopefully in the last job I'll have in this life.
You're one of the only people, Pat, that I've talked to who arrived in the airport industry looking for a job that involved less travel. But that's interesting. Congratulations on becoming an empty nester. That's I'm looking forward to those days myself sometime.
Yeah, my wife often reminds me, Andy, about that error in judgment. She still blames Pat Carroll for it. So,
okay, good to hear that you're off the hook on that. Joined SSP America. It had just, rebranded from having been Creative Host Services, I believe, back in 2008. Started to catch fire with brands like Camden Foods and Silver Diner. There was kind of a different feel to the company, and it's become one of the bigger companies in the industry right now on the food and beverage side. But what were those early days of building the company like, and what was that feeling like back when the company was getting started on this growth path?
Yeah, so Andy, back then, the company was, I use the word infinitesimally small. We in 2007, summer of 2007 is when I came to work at SSP, then it was called Creative Host Services. And, the first several months were, maybe an incubator for, what are you going to do with the acquisition of a company? So at the moment, or at that time, we were private equity based. The notion was that EQT, our private equity parent, was had acquired SSP Group globally to expand the company, and like many private equity funds, and then eventually spin it off. The idea of Creative Host Services, which was a name people knew in the business, Syed Ali was a renowned entrepreneur, but it sort of stood for different things than maybe SSP Group. SSP Group was a gigantic, multinational, multi-billion dollar corporation. So, we felt like we needed to change. And ironically, Creative Host had one of our competitors' names and in their actual name. So, it led to a lot of confusion in the early days. We called it SSP America because it sounded a little less of a mouthful than SSP North America. So it kind of rolled off your tongue a little bit better. We evolved over that 8-9 month period, a lot of creative work that involved the tagline Food Travel Experts, which is now you probably have in your email, auto-populate component. So we did that. But then the next challenge was, how were we going to operate? So the business channel at that point was being run much like a mall business. So, brands were being replicated throughout the business channels, and, headliners like Starbucks, in some cases, McDonald's, California Pizza Kitchen, Burger King, Pizza Hut, et cetera, were the sort of the way of the world. And we were not going to be able to compete with that because we didn't have the real estate to go to those brands to, suggest to them, hey, if I was just picking out another one, Wendy's or, in today's world, Chick-fil-A, you couldn't go to those guys and say, hey, we can offer you massive growth, 20 airport sites. So we had to have a different a business proposition, which, sort of leaned on the notion of using local restaurants to license into airports. And then secondarily, the strength of the global company, which had a number of brands that were specifically dedicated to the travel sector. And so when I say it like that, what they had, Camden Foods was a market that, in earnest, in today's marketplace, still doesn't have a real street side competitor. What it does is offer, slightly different products. It's not trying to become a quick service hamburger location or a quick service pizza location. So the SSP Group had a number of brands. It had a wine bar, Le Grand Comptoir, or LGC. It had a brand called Upper Crust. And we use those sort of as the fill-in, but in between the local brands that we had. And, space was evolving in the marketplace at the time. If you went back 20 years ago, there really weren't wine bars. There weren't markets either. These things were coming along sort of live fire. And it was just sort of good fortune for us that, the business strategy worked. We had been awarded some small contracts with our local brands, and that was sort of catching fire, if you will, in terms of a business strategy. So, it evolved into what we have today, which you know, today that is sort of the mantra of the company, which is to pursue, you know, something that is a taste of place, something that, you know, for an airport reflects something from their local community that that ties to it, so that people can say, by gosh, you know, here I am in New York or Minneapolis in your case, or, you know, the list goes on. So, you know, we carved out a niche, and here 15 years later, it's who we are.
Yep. We're talking today with Pat Murray, the deputy CEO at SSP America. And you touched on it. There's the national brands versus the local flavor, brands versus proprietary, that you're 15, 16 years in now. How has the company has grown, how has the strategy changed, and what are your broader goals, you know, as a company within the industry as you do continue to grow?
Well, Andy, that's probably a several part podcast, but I'll generalize to say this. You know, we got very focused on how to make those relationships work. The company, its support departments, whether it's the legal group, our concept group, our procurement group, our training guys, they're all geared towards how to take somebody else's restaurant that likely doesn't have manuals and books and figure out how to replicate it in our travelized environment. I think there are people who can knock on someone's door and suggest, hey, you know, I can operate your restaurant. There are elements of that you can replicate. We really have a business that's wholly built on that. And, you know, when you sit inside a group of SSP people for any short period of time, it's not going to take long before they bring up things that are, you know, the hallmark of their business channel, whether, you know, for you, it's Lolo's, or, you know, it's, the Palm in New York City, or it's Matt's Big Breakfast, or, you know, the list goes on of, you know, places that have become a part of the culture of our company. So I think that's evolved. And at the same time, you know, we've been able to carve out a niche that isn't always clear to the audience when it starts. The place for, as the term calls, proprietary brands, our own internal creativity, really is drawn around the notion that there aren't things that would naturally be fits from the public anyway. And that you, by having your own thing, it enables you to provide something directly to the consumer that they might not normally see. So, you know, the best example of that would be, I've been in the restaurant business 35 years. There's no national wine bar chain that I'm aware of. But in our environment, you have people traveling where that's something they're kind of curious about. So, you know, having an offering of 100 separate glasses of wine on a wine list is something that's important. The original LGC was only 900 square feet and used to be a Continental Airlines coat check room. So, you know, those things are creative, they're fun. The original location is not there anymore, but, you know, it was something that we internally had a great deal of pride for because it would show up on social media. I can still remember Eric Potts, who was the former airport director in Houston, getting a personal letter from someone about how meaningful it was to them to have that experience. You know, those are things you don't always have. So it does a lot for our company. It makes us feel like, you know, the spirit to serve is something that's important. And it's been a fun ride.
900 square feet, a coat check room, and that's and you turned it into a revenue producing facility. That's impressive. How did you even come up with the idea of doing that one?
Well, yikes! I'm not sure I completely recall how that evolved. The wine bar concept itself existed at SSP. Actually, a part of that room was only like 7.5 feet tall. So I think those that remember it, you know, that was what we called the wine room. So it was right on the corner. It kind of, you know, worked for advertisement and so on. But these are the kind of things that encourage creativity in the business channel. It makes it fun. We have a lot of challenges in our everyday life, but these are the things that propel us through those challenges.
I think you summed up right there the difference between doing business in an airport and doing business on the street. I have to guess if you saw that space on the street, that's probably a pretty hard pass pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, it's just different, right? So beauty's in the eye of the beholder there, I guess.
Sure. Pat, you've taken on the role of overseeing SSP's growth in Central and South America. I'm wondering what kind of insights you're getting there, how that business is going. What's the difference between doing business in Central and South America versus up here in North America?
Yeah, so Andy, a lot of differences. It's an emerging market. There are so many things we take for granted in aviation and airports in the U.S. If you want to travel from Minneapolis to Chicago or Chicago to Dallas, L.A., New York, whatever, there's probably 40 flights a day. The country of Brazil, by example, has circa 250 million residents and is a geography, while not east to west in the same way, north to south more, very similar to the U.S. And, it's a comprehensive place. But there's a, growing future by anyone's estimation, from the southern U.S. border, Mexico, through Argentina and the Caribbean. And, this is something for us that is a long-term path vision. We are in the middle of some substantial growth in Brazil. We operate in 5 airports today, and we have a pretty clear path to getting that to 20. So, I think it's exciting for any listeners out there that have the angle to want to do this. We could probably use 2 more airlines in Brazil for whatever it's worth. There's a lot to that. We did take over the business in the middle of the pandemic. So previous to that, it was managed out of the UK. And, that means a whole lot of things for many listening. You might not know, but to travel from Houston to São Paulo is a 10-hour flight. So it's the curvature of the earth there sort of catches you off guard. It's like going to Central Europe. So there's a big path to that. I guess a couple other things, much like you'd expect in the restaurant business, but certainly at SSP America, Nick Schaefer really oversees that business. Many of your listeners would know Nick. He's been around the business for a long time, very talented, qualified business leader who has the task of both managing the development and the operations. We also have folks, scattered throughout Brazil. I have a couple of those guys who worked with me in my past restaurant life, Andy, who happen to be Brazilian Americans who moved back to Brazil to take on the business. So, we're sort of growing that. But as we speak today, Nick's in Mexico in Monterrey, and we are looking to, connect sort of the geography of North America with that of Brazil. So that's going to take a little bit of work. To grow through Mexico and Central America. So, but it's, it is exciting. There aren't, in the U.S., we might have a potential opportunity that could have 10 or 15 even bidders. The bidders by and large in South America in the food business are generally smaller restaurant companies, not companies that would function like ourselves. Okay. So it's still an evolving market.
When you go to a market like that, evolving, growing, are you scouting for things that might work back home here? Do you ever get an idea when you're at an airport in South or Central America and say, that might be something unique enough to fit in the U.S., something like that?
For sure. I think whenever you travel, you're thinking about how it translates to our everyday life, right? And, I think that those things are important to us. I think one of the things I'd say to people who haven't been to those parts of the world, the U.S. has its challenges, but there's an awful lot of things that you grow to appreciate here that perhaps others don't have every day. And, it's it's a really nice piece of life. We have a little bit more, while we may still have an evolving American culture that's always looking westward, if you will, we have grown to appreciate a lot of luxuries in life that not everybody has. So I'd say that, you know, the fun part about that business today, it doesn't cost nearly what it would to build something there. So it does here. There's some challenges in that. You know, the Americans with Disabilities Act is, you know, something that most adult Americans are familiar with and grew up with, right? My wife's parents happen to be deaf, and that has had a pretty heavy impact on their life. Mm-hmm. While there are accommodations for handicapped individuals throughout the world, it's nothing like what it would be in the United States. And when you're building restaurants, you know, there are a lot of things that goes into that that, you know, have to be considered. There's working conditions. You know, by and large, throughout South America, hourly employees are paid on a salary type basis. And depending on the country you're in, has a lot to do with the number of hours they work. So generally, the lowest of that being 40 or 44, but goes up to 48. And so it's not uncommon that someone would work 6-8 hour days.
Good perspective to have. Pat Murray, Deputy CEO of SSP America. Pat, let's shift gears here just a little bit. You were the first chair, just as COVID was getting started a few years back. You were the first chair of the Airport Restaurant and Retail Association, ARA. Wondering, you know, as a taking on a leader of an organization that represents the industry more broadly, what did you learn from that experience over the couple of years there, and how is the post pandemic recovery period going for SSP and the industry as a whole?
Andy, how about if I'll try to unpack, you know, your, I think, three-part question there, but I'll say the Airport Restaurant Retail Association started with, you know, five people. So, you know, myself, Daryl Benton, Mike Mullaney, Andy Wettig, and Bill Casey. And in each of our cases, we'd had multiple stops in our careers with both companies, airports, et cetera, and had a, you know, I think universal view of that our business channel needed some kind of association to talk about the things that were sort of headwinds in our business channel that came on before COVID. When COVID hit, we actually were at the Denver AXN conference. We had our very first in-person meeting, then choosing our first executive director, Rob Livingston. And, you know, of course, you had no idea. There was sort of this moment of, you know, gosh, what's going to happen? But that gosh, what's going to happen when we were in Denver that day was much like world events, you know, that could impact anyone. I mean, we thought it was going to be difficult. We couldn't have imagined the challenge the next 3 years would have led to in the industry. It's the, you know, good fortune of all of the Retail Restaurant Association's members that, you know, we'd sort of had ourselves somewhat organized prior to that, because when you think about it, many of us didn't see one another for quite a stretch after that, right? And, you know, there's just a lot of topics to discuss. I think in its relevance to our overall business channel, you know, we were building that or putting that together because of all of the existing headwinds and topics that just needed discussion, in our opinion, prior to COVID. COVID accelerated, exacerbated, highlighted, you know, the list goes on, the challenges we had. Now I think that we're certainly on the other side of it. Every day gets a little bit better. You look back in your rearview mirror and you almost have a hard time remembering how terrible it was. Now I think we're settling into what does the future of our business look like, and there just are real challenges. So there's a number of things there that I think are regularly discussed. It's nice that, you know, now we have Andy Wettig, who's, you know, sort of dedicated, you know, the twilight of his career to helping an association. His name is, you know, sort of synonymous with concessions over the last 35 years. And, you know, I think he adds legitimacy to the association. And it takes a balance of how to bring together companies that compete every day and talk about topics for themselves that help one another.
Yeah, it's interesting. As you were talking there, I was reminded that ARO, when we were first talking about it, getting started, was formed to talk about build-out costs and pouring rights. But having the association there during COVID was probably a pretty good thing to have, as everybody was starting to work together trying to make it through. Could you expand a little bit on the post-COVID recovery and you know, how SSP and the industry seems to be doing now, 3 years or so after the worst of the pandemic is over?
Yeah, Andy, I think that, you know, I probably, just like if we had an economist on with us talking about our own economy, you know, there would be a number of data points that look positive, right? But then there's sort of this, it's not cautious optimism. I think it's real concern for the underbelly of things, so to speak, right? I looked at travel from this past weekend, all of which were a few points of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, a few percentage points above travel in 2019 for the same period. And none of us really know. Is that an indication that there's more money in people's pockets to travel? Or is it that the pandemic kind of, you know, pushed to the side school, you know, the school calendar and how people behave? I don't think any of us really know that. We're not sure about how business travel moves and so on. So there's some, you know, significant concerns. I think in a very broad sense, you know, we have very logical evolutionary challenges in the business that are also hitting, you know, restaurants out on the street, but it just happens differently, or it's magnified in our setting. So, you know, labor, maybe a year and a half ago, we would have said was up 50 to 60% since pre-COVID. But, you know, you're rapidly approaching the point of, you know, going up 100%. So if you think about things just in a real national sense, having nothing to do with any particular company or city, there was a time where the mantra was, you know, the minimum wage of $15 an hour. Well, now you have cities. California passed a law yesterday raising the minimum wage in all fast food restaurants to $20 an hour. In Anaheim, on Wednesday of last week, they opined about a $25 an hour rate, minimum wage. And in Los Angeles today, you know, it's being asked for $30 an hour. So see mathematically how that impacts things. The other challenge in the business is how that cost of labor impacts the capital in the business, because to the person who's not doing it every day, they might think we're buying steel and they're trying to understand how the impact of that is. But most of the extreme cost of building buildings in our airports comes from the actual people swinging the hammers or you know, with the screwdrivers or whatever the case might be, laying tile. And so there's a geometric impact of the cost of labor to the cost of capital and how those layer back onto the business. So I don't think we have answers for all that stuff today, by the way. It's just a conversation, and it's not uncommon because of how airports are run that a city perhaps hasn't thought that much about it. They have their own challenges. You know, they're trying to deal with, whether it's, you know, school lunches or, you know, violence or, you know, whatever the topic might be. And then all of a sudden someone's like, hey, yeah, what do we do about the restaurants and airports or the, you know, the concessions and airports? And, you know, if you're an elected official, you're thinking, God, this is a lot to ask of me because I don't know. So, you know, there's still some things that are evolving, Andy. We see longer terms of leases, you know, and when I first started in the business, there were 5 and 7 year lease terms. Now, you know, we've had several RFPs that have 15 years in them. And I think that's a natural reaction to how to accommodate the cost. but that's probably not the real solution. If you and I went out and started our own company and borrowed money from a bank today to go build that business, you know, we couldn't tell the bank we're going to give them their money back in 15 years. They wouldn't accept that. So, you know, we're going to have to evolve a better way to do this. And it's sifting out the business, so to speak. So it's going to take some time. We have to come up with smarter, better ideas. Both the aviation and the restaurant business are good at those kind of things where, elements of creativity come on. So I think we're still going to see a lot of that stuff in the near future here.
Okay. Yeah. The 20 and 25 and $30 an hour, labor costs. I want people to make a good living as much as the next guy, but those are some significant numbers to try to digest. Pat, I'm wondering if we're talking a lot here during these calls about just the evolution of concessions and the customer's experience over the last 15, 20 years. Kind of generally globally, as someone who travels a lot, what's something you like about what's going on in airports right now with the amenities and services that are being offered? And is there something that you'd like to see airports kind of globally add to the system that isn't being done yet right now?
Well, Andy, for sure. The general statement, the quality of service is a massive uptick over the last 20 years, right? A big portion of that, and I think for our company, we'd say, we're an element of that is elevating the food quality that people are going to get. What you expect today is not, the triangle tuna fish sandwich that was made last week, right? So, that's not acceptable. And, generally, we're looking for hot made food, those kind of things, Andy. So I think it sounds funny, but, when I got in the business, it wouldn't have been uncommon to have a beer served to you in a plastic cup, like you were at a fraternity party. And, I think that business has changed quite a bit. So, there's a fair amount to all that in terms of how it translates to the passenger. I think there's more alignment in the industry. So airports, airlines, and all the other businesses that operate in an airport want to broadly elevate that experience, whether it's how to get your bags or how to get an Uber or, whatever it is, right? Those things are being thought about by smart people and being discussed. So I think that part of the experience is fabulous. I'll say in the U.S., we're particularly challenged because of labor. You can't, if you're in an airport, because I'm in every day, and you can see, it takes time to get things. There's more automation in airports, but those things are still going to have to evolve more to the point where you readily can get a cup of coffee in the morning, right? Which today is still a bit of a challenge.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Pat Murray, the Deputy CEO at SSP America. I've asked my questions. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
Hey, thanks, Andy. I think first, thank you. Thanks, AXN, just for, reflecting on all these things. People need to hear, more and more about them. As I sit here thinking about 20 years at AXN, I mean, a lot of stuff's changed in the business. Many of those years have been really good years for SSP. If we can take out the 3 years of COVID, I think we'd say, it's been an awful lot of fun. The industry's evolved quite a bit, new players, new people, new ideas, new things. Some of those have worked. Other ones, been met with more challenge, but that part's super, super exciting. I think among many of the other like little tidbits of the world is this is a business channel that takes a little bit of oomph to get into. When you look around, I'll say late into the evenings at AXN, Andy, and you see all the folks who are, really the movers and shakers, if you will, most of them have hair my color or your color. So, it takes a while. We're going to have to work on who the next generation of folks that manage the business really is. And, you know, I'll just say, as I reflect back on the changes that COVID had to our own business, you know, we want to, at SSP, continue to grow. I mean, that's an element. But along with that growth, I think we want to build a great company. So, you know, there's a lot of things in that. We spend a lot of time, just like we did back in 2007 and 8, trying to contemplate what SSP would be all about. How to passionately express ourselves, how to capture new people into the industry, how to attract them and get them to want to stay and realize that airports are just a super sexy, cool place to be. And, you know, not unlike the challenge you announced about LGC and the piece of real estate there in Houston, there are things that aren't perfect about aviation. But quite often you can dust them off and find out that you might turn it into a gem. So I think there's a lot to all that. You know, very enthusiastic about the next several years. There's going to be more and more change. All us old folks have got to figure out how to embrace that change, right? So, but it's a lot of fun. So thank you for having me, Andy.
Thanks for taking some time, Pat.